Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Horrible Podcast. I'm Brian.
I'm Tyler.
And I'm Drew.
And I'm Lona.
No, there's no and. She just goes,
I'm Lona.
I'm Lona. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She just goes, Lona.
We're a Lona-less.
Yeah, we're Lona-less.
We're alone again. We're aloneness. So, no Lona this week, unfortunately. Just three guys, so, you know. And we picked the perfect movie for it to be a guys night out.
A fest movie.
Did we? This was the perfect movie for a guys night out. all the guys love to sit around and say, oh, no ladies around. Let's watch Larry Fessenden's habit.
Let's watch Larry Fessenden's ass for 2 hours.
Which, like, we get a couple of parts where I'm like, oh, he's going to hang dong. I'm like, no, he didn't hang dong. And then we get
a really close.
He does hang it when he runs down the street. I'm like, yeah. Hanging dong.
Hanging fest.
It's episode 133.
I think so.
I can never remember numbers. It's episode 133. I think I have enumeracy.
I don't remember numbers either. That's why they are all in my phone book on my phone. If I was held hostage and someone's like, call your parents, I'm like, I can't. I can't call my parents.
What? Type in your
I can't call anyone.
I was like, I know my own phone number, and I know my old home number. You think that'll get me something?
I can call work.
I don't know the number to my school.
That's the only one I don't know
the number to my school. I know Kate's number. I don't know my parents' numbers. I don't know anyone else's numbers. Sometimes I forget my work phone number, like my iPhone. There have been times where I've written down my iPhone number wrong and had other people tell me that it was wrong.
Sounds like a really good plot device that no one's used.
Yeah.
Yeah, like call
like in a Bond movie.
I can't. Like, they lost their phone, like in a horror movie, they lost their phone, and what's the reason for not getting in touch with anyone? Like, they get to a house, and as a phone, it's like, I can't.
Like, they, like,
oh, they did use a knock-knock.
Well.
A little bit.
I was going to say, it would be one of the things where the phone breaks, and someone has a burner phone, and they have to, like, hey, call, I don't know any numbers.
No, I think it's even better. I think they need to get to that house. Like, they're in the middle of nowhere, so there's no service. They get to a house that has a phone. Like, they actually have a phone, like the scary country people, but they can't call anyone because they're like, I don't know anybody. I can't do it. I can't call anybody.
It's so weird because we've gotten almost beyond the idea of country people. Because I mean, I'm not from Appalachia, so that's probably the last bastion of this kind of talk. But, like, I come from a pretty rural area.
You too.
And everybody there has a cell phone. And right, at least, yeah, one TV. So it's really, like, we've almost opted out of that. It's almost like we've opted out of the haunted castle. Like, that's no longer a thing that, like, that's not a plot device that is believable in a movie now. Unless it's, you know, Guillermo del Toro.
Okay,
I think
period.
Most people,
yeah.
Yeah, well, that's period. I think most people still buy it, though. If you sit there, most people who haven't seen and been out in the country,
right,
still think of it as, you know, as that. I think most people would buy that. You know, there's somebody like, well, we ain't got no cell phones, but we got me a landline, so you just call whoever you know.
Yeah, what's that character name from The Simpsons? I think that was what is his name? Oh, Cletus? Is it Cletus?
Yeah.
I think you sound like Cletus.
Did you ever see the movie or the documentary? I can't
no.
remember. The one by Rory Kennedy, the American Hollow.
Mm-mm.
It was called. No, I haven't. I know what you're talking about.
So it was these people that lived in the Appalachian Mountains, and yet they were wearing, like, the youngest kid at the time was probably 17 in the show, had a Tupac shirt on. I was like, Tupac has made it into the Hallows of Appalachia.
Hallows. Like, hallows.
The Hallows of Appalachia. There are no more places on Earth where media has, you know, it
where
hasn't
reached. There is no place where Tupac hasn't been.
Ooh. Right.
Tupac, that might be where he's hiding out. That's why they haven't found him yet.
He's hiding in Cuba. Everybody knows that.
Why?
He and Biggie were.
And Elvis?
They were, you know, Joe Kennedy. Joe Kennedy left $1 million. In his will to hide out any rappers who were slain.
Well, he and Biggie were gay lovers, and that's where they moved after everything to get away from the spotlight. Yeah. Okay. They're best friends, and they're like, man, let's just bro out down here in Cuba.
Is that based on anything, or are you just
based on Brian
speculating wildly?
I'm speculating wildly.
I will have to say that I do think it's interesting that people have these really wild ideas about what rural areas are now, that does still pass muster, that's just like, you know what? I still think that's what the South is like. I think that's really, as someone who has been in the South nearly his entire life.
Well, I mean, can't you imagine? I mean, Ryan Murphy would make a show about that. And that's how it would be, because that's how it is. Ryan Murphy knows, right?
Well, I mean, you know, his shows are all such stereotypes anyway, like of things. I would not be
surprised
by that. It's just weird, like, what will the next iteration of the haunted house be? Because it seems like it seems to be where technology's last, the last bastion of the lack of technology is. So, like, I wonder how that will change over time. Like, what will it be next? That's an interesting thing to think about, I think.
Fess has already taken it to the Arctic or Antarctic, whichever, with The Last Winter.
Which I want to see. I haven't seen. Speaking of Fessenden,
yeah, man.
Segue. I want to talk. We're gonna talk about. I guess I want to talk about it, but we're all gonna talk about Habit.
But Tyler's the only one who's gonna talk about it.
Yeah, you guys are gonna talk about other movies, and I'm gonna talk about Habit. Okay. So I'm really interested to see what your impressions were of this of Habit. What year did it come out? First of all.
1995.
This is my second time watching. I realized I knew I'd read about it in Entertainment Weekly years ago, and I had been getting that for years, and I didn't remember having actually watched it. But as I was turning on, I was like, oh no, I totally watched this. This is like my second viewing, I guess.
It's a movie that either came out in 1995 or last year. Like, that's what it felt like. It just felt like this could be the 1990s, or it could be last year. That's like the way that it was shot. It just felt like it timeless in a way, I guess. So what were your impressions of it? Brian, what do you think of Habit?
It is a typical 90s film to me. Like, it felt like, I mean, it hit at the, right at the time where all the indie films were taking place. So we got Pulp Fiction, Reservoir Dogs,
Clerks,
all that kind of stuff. I enjoyed the film. I mean, it is slow, but it is
entertaining.
It is It was entertaining. Like,
In
an indie, in only a way that a 90s indie film could be, where, you know, they had to be all talk because they couldn't afford. I mean, indie films now can have some small budget where they can afford some things, but this was done just, you know, general, you know, blood scares. Actually, I didn't even realize it was a vampire film until like 10 minutes in. I was like, oh wait, this is a vampire movie. After looking it up, after starting to watch it, I knew we'd watched it for horror, but Fess has done a lot of horror stuff, so I had no idea what to expect.
I think it's a movie that would work even without a horror like premise. Like, it was just an interestingly written movie about a junkie, ostensibly. And like, that is a well-mined, like, more horror movies should use something like that instead of just saying like, oh, these are just regular teenagers or whatever. Like, having this kind of protagonist never gets old to me. Like, this sort of Hunter S. Thompson finding the edge of society kind of thing is, I like, permanent midnight kind of stuff. Drew, what'd
you think about it? Yeah, the Lost Weekend
guy. Yeah. Like,
I thought at first, like, God, I don't know, it's like Nick Cave's vampire film. When Fessenden standing there with his trench coat and his hair. I'm like, Jesus Christ.
It's kind of like...
Did you say Nick Cage's vampire film? Yeah, I thought Cage's so too. I was very, very much
Nick
so,
Cage
yeah.
or, you know...
Oh, really?
Leaving Las Vegas meets a Nick Cage vampire movie.
Well, Nick Cage did a
vampire. I'm a vampire. Okay.
Remember the Kiss of the Vampire?
Yeah. That's right. But that's what I'm saying. Like, Kiss
I'm
of
a vampire. I'm a vampire.
But it's Nick Cage meets Leaving Las Vegas. Because there were... I don't... Like... If I have a problem with this movie, other than the running time, I almost think it could have gone even further in the direction of his addiction. Because I found that fascinating, the way that it's just sort of this like casual addiction that everyone expects him to have.
Well, then, you know, because we have, you have friends like that. They just know they get hammered and they,
you mean,
they, you know, oh, hey, so-and-so's drunk.
Yeah.
Friends, I mean, like Stanford from Sex and the City, who's his best friend.
Yeah. Willie.
It was
Willie,
not Stanford, but it's so Willie, like Willie Garson.
Willie
man,
Garson.
I was
say Willie Geist. Willie Garson.
Oh, man. He's been on so many TV shows. He's on Mr. Belvedere, Boy Meets World.
This guy or Willie Geist?
Willie Garson.
Willie Garson. I don't know why I keep wanting to call him Willie Geist. Who is that? That's the news
well,
guy.
Geist is ghost in German, and this is a horror podcast.
I think Willie Geist
and
is...
Garson means boy.
That's all the French I got.
Willie boy.
I liked it, as at the same time it was exactly what I was afraid it was going to be, which means I was also terribly uninterested at times. Yeah. Like, I mean, it's just, I mean, that was what I was afraid of. Like, as much as I liked it there, it's just after a while, it's like, I don't know that I want to watch a 90s, you know, an indie 90s, character genre piece that it was. I mean, it's what every one of Fessenden's written and directed movies that I've watched Wendigo, I've seen this now twice, and I've watched last winter, all kind of fit in that same place. It's like, I really like them and want to like them more than I end up doing. But I thought there's some things that are done so fascinatingly. I thought there's some things that are done extremely creepy, and I thought, you know, I was utterly enthralled by moments of it, and I also have a sick 5-month-old, and so I've slept through some of it. You know, because it just wasn't that, it wasn't exciting enough to force me through some of the slower paced segments and things like that.
I started watching it this morning. I didn't go to work today. So I started watching, well, this morning, this afternoon, and then the new phone came. And I didn't realize the time wasn't correct on the new phone. So I like woke up at one point. I like dozed off at one point. I was like, oh, it's like 1:50. That's fine. And then the next time I woke up, like, I knew that it was the apartment had gotten dark. And I was like, my phone is like, it said 2:40. I was like, oh, I'm fine. And then I looked at my other phone. I was like, oh, shit. It was like 5:10. I was like, all right, well, let me go ahead and finish watching this movie now.
Well, Brian, what you said you liked it.
Yeah, it is totally the... It is totally just a vampire version of the
90s indie movie.
The 90s film. These character study really films, because you couldn't really do action films like that. People spoke, just constantly talked the whole film.
It's a Jim Jarmusch movie.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah. That's where I was about to go with it. Like, it's the kind of...
Waits was a vampire.
It's the kind of... I mean, it's really Jim Jarmusch's newest movie, just done 20 years before it. What was that one called? No One Gets Out of Here Alive, or what was it called? What?
Yeah.
Only Lovers Get Out of Here Alive?
No, Only Lovers Left Alive.
It was like Only Lovers Left Alive meets the girl who walks home alone at night.
Right.
Meets Before Midnight.
I think Meets Permanent
Midnight. Or After Midnight?
Or whatever... One of the, I've never seen any of the before movies.
After sundown / before sunrise.
Yes. Like,
it's a movie that's fascinating to watch because it was filmed at a time before everything could be done in post. And so, like, I love watching indie flicks from the 90s to see how they were shot, because I am fairly confident that I could make that movie. Like, I feel like I could make this movie, but not nearly as good. Like, I could shoot this movie. Maybe I couldn't write, direct it, or make it good. But, like, looking at the way the scene on the roof was shot, like, there was only maybe one or two lights on that entire, like...
You mean the boning scene?
I was going to say, he just wants to bone Anna.
You mean the Red Shoe Diaries
right.
scene?
The Zalman King scene?
That's all I thought about the whole time. And when the problem was, when watching it on Shudder, on my, I was at the computer at that point, I kept thinking that the scenes were, like... jump cuts. Then I realized it was just like the crawling feet along the bottom of the shutter flipping through things. I was like, oh, it keeps flipping. And I was like, no, my eyes are just screwing with me because I'm old.
Yeah. And so, like, I love the way the movie was shot, first of all. Like, there was some really interesting, like, the sort of, like, necessity breeds invention of the kind of 90s indie flick. I mean, it's one of the things I don't like about some modern horror movies, is that they're able to do so much with CGI, even on a small budget, and the way that movies are shot. Like, a lot of them, the weird thing is, like, the technology being democratized has made movies look less interesting. And so, like, if there is one thing this movie does really well, I think it's that the way that it's shot is truly it's unique in, but in a sort of like bland indie way. Like, it's unique, but not. Like, I loved some of the shots, but it seemed like, oh, these are the shots we could get rather than these are the shots we could imagine. And so, like, that's the thing I love about this movie is that it's the shots that they could get.
Fessenden himself is such a powerful presence in this, and obviously yeah. should be. He wrote, directed, and stars in it. But I mean, I think it's as much his acting. I mean, his Sam is so powerful from the oddness of him as a main character with his missing tooth.
Right.
To his hair, he's skinny and he looks like a character from Trainspotting. It's but not as an actor. Like, it's like, oh my gosh, he's really just from Trainspotting. he's so dynamic in it. And that's the thing. Yeah. It's such a shame that somehow this didn't propel him further or higher during that time period, like some of those other indie guys. Because imagining what he would have been able to do. And maybe he wouldn't have wanted to. Maybe he didn't. Maybe he chose not to. He could have done with some of the bigger budgets that those other guys like Kevin Smith and then Quentin Tarantino and all of them get out of this time period, I think it'd be fascinating to see what he would have done with some of those chances.
I mean, this is a time when street cred mattered. You know what I mean? Like, this is a time when people, like, I think that's what I hate about today, if I can step on my old man soapbox for a minute. Like, this was a time when people would actually eschew fame in favor of creative control over something. And so I think that seems to align more with his standards than, I mean, but that also could be like, well, he didn't make it, so he can say like, no, I kept it street. Mm-hmm. But you know,
I'm still hood.
I'm still hood, man. I'm still Jenny from the block. But
Larry from the block.
Yeah. Fess from the block. I can't think of any puns related to Fess and
Fessy
street.
From the block.
I'm Fessy, yeah. I mean, it's...
Please won't be to confess out of me.
But yeah, to get into the plot, it's a fairly simple...
There's not a lot.
There's not a lot of plot, like, which I like about these. I mean, it feels like a... what's their names? The brothers? The
Duplass?
The Duplass brothers. It feels like a Duplass brothers movie. But yeah,
the
I mean...
Mumblegore?
Yeah, it's a
knife. Ugh. I mean, it's the father of these things, or the grandfather of those movies, though. I mean, certainly, I think so.
Yeah, I mean, it is, and it's ostensibly that Larry Fessenden falls for a chick who is a vampire, and they have really wild, violent sex, and she turns out to be a vampire, and that's really the entirety of the plot. Like, he's, well, and the subplot is that he's a raging alcoholic, and that's why no one thinks it's strange when he starts to get sick and weird. And like, there's an interesting undercurrent of the dangers of sexuality. Yeah, like the dangers of sexuality in this movie that a lot of films at this time wouldn't touch, unless it was in a, like, it talks about sex in a very real way instead of like a preachy kind of,
right, yeah.
Like, I don't know, didactic kind of way. Like,
it just doesn't moralize about it.
Yeah, I do love, but like,
there are dangers to it. They're like, hey, yeah, it's fun. It's great. She's hot, and this is crazy sex, but you might be a vampire.
Right, well, and not to mention...
Or get AIDS.
Vampire if...
You might be a vampire. I can't think of a joke even. Like, I started a joke and I
see your reflection in the mirror. Could you imagine a group of redneck vampires? I'm sorry to interrupt your.
Yeah, I've seen True Love.
Yeah,
True Love, True Blood.
Oh, okay. True Blood is that 100% that the.
I do declare, Sookie. What do you?
Sookie.
I fucking hate that voice, and every other Southern voice in movies. Yeah, there's this weird undercurrent of like dangerous sexuality. This, because one of my favorite moments in the movie though is the where it's after they've had sex for the first time, and he asks if she had protection, and they don't, and then he asks her afterwards, and then he has this very like Nicholsonian moment where he's like, "You gotta ask," you know what I'm talking about? Where they're in the tub.
It's there for him, yeah.
Yeah, like he definitely has a Jack Nicholson-esque persona. So like, but I love that moment though, because he's already like, whatever it is, he's got it, or it's, you know, like he's in danger of getting it if there's something there. But yet he's like, you know, you gotta ask. And I, like, there were moments like that that made me love this movie. And
he's like five easy pieces, Jack Nicholson.
Yeah, he is. Like, he's like late '60s, like
carnal knowledge,
Hey, Last Picture Show, Jack. Or no, that's not Jack Nicholson.
Man
it.
Always rings twice, Jack Nicholson.
That's a little bit later. Yeah. It's like, yeah, I think Five Easy Pieces.
Right around there. Five Easy Pieces, Carnal Knowledge, at late '60s, early '70s.
Yeah. Princey's Honor was also later, wasn't it?
Yeah. When you're dealing with Angelica Houston, you're talking about the '80s by then. Yeah. That's like 85.
So yeah. Early.
That's post Terms of Endearment. That's 83.
So pre Cuckoo's Nest, Jack Nicholson. Let's keep just thinking of eras of Jack Nicholson and place Fessenden into them.
This Easy Rider. He could have been Easy Rider.
Yeah, this is Easy Rider Jack Nicholson. It's, yeah. And he wears a helmet in that one scene. No, he doesn't.
Jack Nicholson did. I got.
Oh, no, Larry Fessenden didn't.
Have any of you ever had coffee, to-go coffee, and then put it on the stove in a pot to reheat it the next morning?
No, because it's not the 1990s. We have microwaves.
I saw him do that. I was like, I've never even thought of that. Like putting your leftover coffees in the pot and then just reheating it. Like when I say pot, I don't mean a coffee pot. I mean a literal pot.
Yeah, you remember in 1998 when the microwave was invented and it changed everything. I've never heated coffee on the stove, but I've microwaved it. And I've put it back into the pot and run it again without water so it just reheats it. So effect, but still
have
bad
you
coffee.
Ever brewed it and then run it back through again to get double?
Yeah, I've done that before.
At your low moments. It's been a couple low moments.
It was a dark time, I gotta admit. That wasn't one of my brightest spots when I needed that caffeine.
I mean, the thing about this movie, if nothing else, is it's so obvious how influential it is on all the modern indie horror that we like right now. I mean, you could insert Jeremy Gardner or AJ Bowen into this role if it were made nowadays, or Habit would be like a Battery follow up, like the Vampire.
The Vampire Diaries.
The Vampire Battery kind of deal. And it's just, I mean, it's just, and I don't mean that to be dismissive at all. Yeah. I think that's just how important Fessenden is, even if he never made it outside of a small, like festival sort of world of acclaim. I mean, I think he's so important to the current, horror filmmakers and horror actors and everyone like that. I mean, I just think, it's amazing how important he was to them. I mean, he's their, I don't even know what their film equivalent would be. I wish I could come up with it off the top of my head and haven't thought enough to say, but he's just such a huge influence on all that stuff we like nowadays.
He is the Ramones to the rest of the American punk movement. I mean, and I think
he never made it as big. I guess that's the thing. It's like, yeah. I want something smaller. I guess still, but I like
the
idea.
Television. He was the band Television. Like there are other
people love to like. It's they're critically acclaimed as like an amazing punk band, but no one like really outside of music knows who Television is.
Right. Yeah, and it's
like everyone, even in the circles that. Of films that we like, everyone knows who Fessenden.
Right. I mean, and that I think that's why he plays such a pivotal, a tangential role in those films. Is like this is the homage to let everyone know, like we have seen these movies, and this is part of who we are. Like Larry Fessenden is part and parcel to that. And like watching this movie makes me like other movies that I didn't like as much in retrospect, even more. Like
Trigger Man.
Which I didn't realize that Glass Eye Picks actually produced all of those, like The Roost, Trigger Man, and House of the Devil.
I also
The what, Brian?
House of the Devil.
That's what I was waiting for.
I saw y'all's faces. I was like, I knew they're not going to say anything until I do it.
We've learned that trick.
But specifically, We Are Still Here, I think. Is that the one that Fessenden was in where he's possessed, where he yes. gets possessed at one point? That's it, right? Yeah.
No. That's the
What's the one where he's in, that he's in?
The one We Are Still Here is the one about the, it's the remake. Oh, shoot. I don't know.
We Are Still Here is the one with Barbara.
Is that the title?
Yeah, the one where he's like the...
Is that what it's called? Okay.
They're the, they're the psychics. Yeah, that it makes me like that movie more in retrospect. And I kind of... Beyond the acting, I kind of want to go back and see that, like rewatch that movie.
He's so good at it. That was the thing. Yeah, originally, he was really good at it.
And he does have a really magnetic presence in film. And I think, like... It's weird. I don't know that a lot of it's something that is, I think, is ineffable. It's something that you just can't manufacture. And lots of people try to manufacture indie cool and they can't. And it's something that like Tom Waits has that I just will never you could put me in a whole stack of leather jackets and I wouldn't be as cool as Tom Waits. Like I could have a whole carton of cigarettes in my mouth and I would not be as cool as Tom Waits. Like
I'm imagining Tyler in all of these leather jackets with all these cigarettes in his mouth right now.
Like he's all bundled, like he can't even move his arms. He's like Randy from Christmas Story.
You're cool now. But it's just something like
smashing your throat with a rock. God, oh my god.
But the thing is like It's not that Larry Fessenden is cool in a traditional way. Like he's cool in the like I don't really give a shit about anything kind of way. Yeah. Like
but not in like cool in that way, but not that he's ever had to say that or even try. Like he's
no one asked him. Yeah, because they just know.
And he's it almost feels like people have to think about it. It's not like people go like automatically, yeah, he's cool. I bet his friends in the movie were like, oh, wait, Larry. Yeah, Fess is cool.
It's like those people that, it's like the friends that you have that are artists that don't have to work a regular job and haven't for a long time. I mean, they make a comment about him, you know, he's inherited some money from his mother or father dying.
Well, the dad just died.
The dad just died.
Big, yeah.
So he has, you know, so he has money, but I have a feeling he's always been strange, but he has, he doesn't have to answer to anybody else. Like, all of us have had to answer to someone else at some point, and still do, where even at this point, if we were given complete autonomy for, you know, write, like if we were able to write books and be paid for it forever, or, you know, and make a living off of it, or anything else, we'd still have a sense of being square, because I feel like I've been square for a long time that I can never match that kind of coolness. And I think that that's the kind of aura that those guys put off, is that, like, you know, I mean, I'd have a real problem with like waking up in a park bench covered in newspaper, but these guys probably wouldn't care.
Yeah, I mean, there's several several of the early scenes involve Larry Fessenden waking up in the park or on the subway, as it were,
with his pocket sliced
open. I love the early scenes of this movie, of him going, I love the Halloween party that wasn't trying too hard. It's just like people in kind of masks. I love the reference to Cyrano de Bergerac. Like, I guess
they thought it was Pinocchio.
Yeah. There are so many just sort of moments of this movie that are awesome. That I really liked, even through sort of the slower sections of it. And like the more I sort of step away from this movie as a fan is where it gets more experimental and gets like the scenes where he's hallucinating. Like I see them as necessary, but those were the scenes I felt could have been cut down somewhat to cut the running time. Like, I mean, this movie's 152 or so. If you get it down to
Shutter lied to me as well when it said 130.
Yeah. Oh, did it say 130? Mine said 152, but I think
I said 130, and I'm like, it hit 127, and I'm like, he's just talking to Willie Garson right now. This isn't about to end.
Willie Garson. But I mean, you chop that down to 145, it's a lot tighter. It's, you know, it's a movie that really moves a lot faster. And but I still really, really liked it and liked a lot of it.
It's funny that I don't know why. Like I don't even with even in this film, the filmmakers tend to want to prolong certain scenes unnecessarily. Like in like the at the film festival when I'm watching submissions, my normal complaint for films is like, you need to cut this down. Like it, right. Like this.
You're like a studio head who's like, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing is, like, I'm not a filmmaker. I haven't made a film, but I know that I don't need. I know that at least 5 to 7 minutes of this film could be taken out.
Yeah.
And it's just one of those feelings you get, and it's the same way with this. But, I mean, I guess as an independent filmmaker though, you have to kind of pad it to, I don't know.
You're second guessing Fess right now. Oh, that's
that's dangerous. Bad move.
You've come back to get
I think he's about to jump into the. He'll jump into the podcast right now somehow. I think he'll just show up.
I think
he's going to call in all of a sudden.
Man, I tell you, well,
I hear you're talking about me.
My Larry Fessenden is very close to my Ross Perot, so I will do neither
like
for you. I mean, I just imagine that. This is also produced at the time where movies ran closer on a pretty consistent basis, like at 2 hours as sort of a matter of course, you know, like 145 is a good movie. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's weird how the tastes change. And like, I think that's what's happening here. But I also think it's the lack of an editor, this is his kind of his singular vision. So of course he's not going to cut it down to like, the one, you know, the 90-minute standard. I guess that's what we should call it, the 90-minute standard. And so I think that's something. Like if you could have a go at editing this film, where would you cut it down?
I would cut the sex scenes out, and that's coming from me.
Really?
It's true. It is coming from Brian.
So, I found them so.
He's a degenerate.
I found them so interesting and out of the norm.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that side of it, but the idea, like the maybe the rooftop one, which I understand. I mean, it was lit amazingly.
With one light, like it felt like there was one light
one
in the lamp. There was one headlight, and they made it home.
I'd cut the whole like ocean swim sequence out. That didn't seem to make a difference because they didn't really have a conversation about how he felt until he got back from the swim.
Right. Okay. I'm okay with that. I think that's also the movie like reaching for production value. Like it's one of those things where it's like, all right, well, you know what? Let's shoot at the ocean for some reason.
Yeah. No. I mean, I get that too. But I don't know. Maybe
there was a lot of stuff. The
Fessenden's dong. You're gonna say Fessenden's dong.
No. I want to see Fessenden's.
There was sort of a lot of stuff toward the end that felt repetitive, like and more cyclical than like in a straight line headed toward the end. And I felt like that stuff could have been cut. I kind of feel pretty strongly about the first half of the movie.
I that was the strongest part to me. I thought too. I was there thinking anything I wasn't awake for would probably be something that could be cut.
I would say so too. Something I don't remember can be cut.
The entire first chunk of the movie, I mean, even though I was tired, I was not overwhelmed enough. I still wanted to know what was going on and see it. And just as it went on, I didn't grow less interested, but I grew less forced to pay attention, I guess is the thing.
Yeah.
And I felt less coerced into, I want to know what happens, and more like, I kind of think I know what's going to happen.
At a certain point, I felt like the movie hit a wall and then kept going with its same plot device. Like, I felt like she knew he knew what she was, and yet she continued to toy with him far longer than was necessary. Like, I felt like the sort of climax of the film should have happened at a like sooner. They should have gotten to the point where they fought in his apartment much sooner than what actually happened.
And also a great, I mean, not great, but something you don't see very often, a female rape, basically.
Yeah.
Fessenden.
Yeah, I mean.
You don't see Fessenden get raped by females very often?
I don't see I can say I'm 100% certain this is the first time I've ever seen Larry Fessenden raped by a female.
That needs to happen more in cinema. I mean, honestly.
Fessenden being raped.
It's
some weird.
The movie's. I don't want to say trans.
Terrible conversation.
I know.
I was like, how do I pull myself out of this nosedive?
This movie's trans. I don't want to use the word transgressive because I feel like that's
my
something,
word.
I know that's your word, but it's out of the norm. It's sort of extra. Extra normal, super
extra aggressive.
It's extra aggressive. It moves across aggressions a lot. Like it does a lot of things that's one of the things that benefits movies like this that are independent. They can do things that are so abnormal that no mainstream film would ever do. And that's one of the things I really liked about it. Like even one of the reasons why independent horror often is so uninteresting is that even the independent filmmakers are looking to make something entirely and utterly formulaic. Like they right. try to say like, well, we're going to make this formulaic 90-minute movie, but instead of this, we'll have this, which they don't realize that that's still the formula, even though they're like, instead of this ending, we'll have this ending. And like that sort of tinkering with the denouement of a film just doesn't work. Like that's not the thing that makes a movie special. It's like all the inner workings of the plots and like how a plot moves along that makes it really interesting. And this movie has that. Like I didn't expect the lesbian scene, nor did I expect there wasn't that like argument that I expected in the movie either. Like the normal, like, oh, I don't like you. I can't believe you did this kind of stuff. Because mm-hmm. it kind of just happens like at the end, like she's killed basically everybody he knows and then they have it out and then they both die.
Now, I am not, wrong to just assume that this is not a vampire, but something in his head, and he's just an alcoholic.
No, I think that's fair.
I mean, is that what you guys thought? I mean, the movie's called Habit.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a viable.
And then, I mean, at the end, when they see the bodies, you see the two bodies, and turns around from the Stanton's point of view, Stanford's point of view, and it's just Larry Fessenden. And all I kept thinking of is like, this is not like. The vampire is alcoholism. Like, that's what's sucking his life away.
Yeah, I certainly think that is... I mean, this is allegorical in that way.
Yeah, okay. I just making sure that I was like, am I just reading too much in it? I mean, it's just a straight vampire film? Because this is... I mean, he obviously has some problems. I mean, his other friend, early Jack White, does disappear.
Right.
It's true, yeah. Early Jack White, yeah.
Also, you know, the amount of 90s guitar playing and... Yeah.
The number of 90s songs in this movie. Let's just say
I do have a feeling that he had a lot of friends that he got had pulled a lot of favors for. Be like, hey man, can I put my song in your movie? Although the score, not the songs, was actually really good. Like whoever scored it, which I'll have to look up, did a pretty decent job at making like it sound atmospheric and fit the film. So
the only, you know, I would agree with you about the allegory of
Joffrey Kidd.
Joffrey.
God.
And son of a bitch.
He choked on food in 1998 and died. I would agree with you about the allegorical aspects of alcoholism, save for the fact that there are scenes outside of Larry Fessenden's purview. So like the scene with the ex-girlfriend and she, where they make out and she ostensibly kills. I guess we don't see her die though, do we? Do we see the ex-girlfriend die, the one he used to beat up?
No, we don't see her die. But, you know, he's got blood on his hands and the knife in his hand that we...
Those are lyrics, aren't they?
Blood.
No. I'm talking about the scene with the... Not the one he just broke up with, but the one who was really jealous. Yeah, not Liza, but the other one. The one with the curly hair.
Oh, his Stanford's wife?
Yeah, she and Sam used to date.
Yes. Yeah. So, and she's jealous of every girlfriend he has.
Right. And so we don't see her die. So, I mean, potentially it could be just a giant head fake and it all just is in his mind. Like the friend did actually just disappear, but
that would be very 90s.
So, I mean
they say the company, like, he disappears all the time.
Right. And so I think that's fair.
Lenny from Motorhead.
That's what it seems like. I think that's all fair, but I don't know that it's true. Like, right. I think sure. I could write a fucking great 5-page paper, like college term paper on how it could be just about alcohol, but I don't know that that's true.
No, I agree with you. This would be a great, like, film class.
Right.
Film.
It's really, I mean, God, I hate college me so much. I wrote a 10-page paper about the opening shot of Touch of Evil, and I just...
God, you could smell your own farts, couldn't you? You're like,
so,
oh.
All right, can I tell you guys something really embarrassing?
Please.
Okay, so this is apropos of nothing. One of my more embarrassing endeavors in college was my freshman year. I wrote a 5-page paper comparing Kate Chopin's Story of an Hour. It's the story about the woman who she thinks her husband died in a railway accident, and he comes home at the end and she dies of a heart attack. And, you know, ostensibly it's about her being imprisoned by her husband because she was not really happy but stayed with him forever. I wrote a 5-page paper comparing that short story to the song My Own Prison by Creed.
Oh my God.
I love it. I'd love to read that paper.
I would pay to, if you, I know
would
you have
publish that. You got to put that online.
It's on a floppy disk, I think.
You
got
to put it online.
There's
if
no
I could
way.
Find
floppy
it.
Disks were even a thing when I was in
yeah,
college.
Yeah, they so were. Yeah, they were. No, we hadn't gotten to zip drives. I still had some stuff on there.
I couldn't afford a zip drive. I had floppy disks. But yeah, my freshman, that was also the class where I embarrassed myself by it. We were reading. Oh fuck! What's it called? The story, the novel about Vietnam that's told in stories.
Things
They Carried. Tim O'Brien.
I have that one sitting on my table right
and
now.
And we got to the story that where it describes the beauty of a guy getting blown up by a grenade. Like it describes him flying across, you know, like the sun, you know, drifting through whatever. And I was such a redneck douchebag, but. The professor was like, can you see how beautiful this imagery was? And I raised my hand and said, no, I don't see anything beautiful about this at all. This is war. This is not. She's like, but don't you see? I was like, no, I don't. I had family members go and die in Vietnam. I didn't.
Oh, my God.
I was that guy in class. And
oh my God, I remember,
and so wait, let me finish my story. But I dug them in and I pushed back because I thought like that was me toying with intellectualism. Like, no, I'm not going to agree with everything that's said in here. And now I do. Like, I totally see the beauty in that story and I love Tim O'Brien. I love fucking Things They Carried. But her response was to look at the rest of the class and say, okay, and move on. I was that guy. In that moment, I was like, oh, shit. I was just that guy. And so later, I tried to, like, backpedal on it and was like, you know what? I see. What do you mean?
But that's what – I think that's what a big thing that a lot of people don't understand about what college is supposed to do. It is supposed to challenge – you and everything that you and even learning is to challenge what you have thought or what you have other people have told you in your head. And look, it's happened. Like, you know, we're 15 years down the road and you understand what that meant. Like,
yeah,
the things that Gary. I were, you know, embarrassed the shit out of me of that I did in college. I'm now like, yeah, well, you know, that was stupid, but I understand that. I will never make, you know, when I,
yeah,
my last year of comp lit major when they intermingle us with the graduate students and they chew your ass out every time you make a comment, like they just destroy you for what you do. You're like, you know, you go back, you slink back, and then you build yourself back up, and then you're like, well, you know, I don't have the education they do, but I'm going to be damn sure I don't get embarrassed like that again.
It just goes to show though that I don't have inherent cool. Like, I do not have...
You're not Larry Fessenden.
I'm not Larry Fessenden. I do not claim to be Larry Fessenden. Mm. Never will I be Larry Fessenden.
Let's just say that by us having a podcast, everyone knows we're not inherently cool.
Yeah, like...
I mean, I think we're cool, but that's probably uncool.
The way you did your head, I think we're cool.
Hey, man.
We're cool, man.
None of us are Larry Fessenden.
Yeah, I don't have inherent cool. I just don't... Like... Somebody truly cool probably wouldn't have a weekly podcast about horror movies. Like, inherently cool. Like, Like Tom Waits, cool. Like Tom Waits would be like, you know what? This week we're going to talk about Larry Fessenden.
And so I'm pretty sure now all Kevin Smith fans are going to come and start hitting us hard because you just said Kevin Smith isn't cool.
But like Kevin Smith
isn't cool.
Kevin Smith
is. But I still think his fans we're now going to be in trouble. So now, thank you for being here for the last episode of the Horrible Podcast.
We're about to get doxxed.
Is uncool, but he happened to hit it right.
Kevin Smith is the kind of cool that is completely uncool.
He's never said he was cool. I think he would say the exact opposite. He'd say, I'm not cool. Yeah. I think he knows that.
But
yeah.
He is like, I think Kevin Smith is cool, but Kevin Smith does not have inherent cool. Like he doesn't have that thing that like when he Tom Waits has a thing that when he walks in a room, it grows 5 degrees cooler, and you're like, what? Oh, it's Tom Waits.
You know who doesn't know? Quentin Tarantino.
No.
He's not cool.
He's in the same. I think I put him in the
he's
same.
He's a genius.
Yeah.
Kevin Smith. Yeah, they're both very smart, they're aware of what their influences are and they promote them proudly, but like if Larry Fessenden makes it to the film festival, I will be just
watery need.
I would not be able to speak to him probably because I just like I am intimidated by his just who he is. And he, you know what? He'd probably be like the most laid back, chill guy ever.
But he's still so cool.
In the morning, like if I get a call, I'm like, hey man, I want some pancakes. You know what a good place is? I'm like,
House of Pancakes International.
I'd be sitting there explaining the menu to him, and he'd be like, well, hey man, it's fine, whatever. That's fine. I just wanted some pancakes, man.
That's not a bad Fessenden.
You know, Kurt Russell, inherently cool.
Yeah.
Like, that's just the thing. They're just people who are cool, you know?
Yeah, there are. There are people who are just inherently cool, and I think
they're born with it, man. I think it's partly that they're born with it and partly that they're raised in an environment like where it can just be innate to them.
Yeah.
And I don't have it. Like, whatever it is.
But we're too self-aware.
Yeah.
Just too worried about it.
They're raised... I think you're right. I think they're born with an idea that not giving a shit. I mean, we can pretend not to give a shit.
But it's pretending. But I do give a shit.
Someone will say something to us and we'll pretend
Any
like
shit.
We'll pretend like it doesn't bother us, but it bothers us. And we'll take it back and we'll sit there and think about it for days and days. And like
and then
now,
we'll text each other and be like, oh man, well, I'm sorry that I did. You know,
and I can even remember stuff people said to me like in middle school and high school. Those little inane things that probably didn't mean things to them, but I can remember it. And it sits on my mind still. It doesn't happen for those guys. It'd be like,
it's like Paul Newman. I mean, like, I'm sure he tried, but it feels like he didn't, you know, and that's the difference. Like, if I suddenly got famous, people would not go like, you know what? I could see that. It would be like, really? So
it's too much effort on our part. There's just so much effort.
But on the flip side of like, I think on the female realm, I think like Jennifer Lawrence is cool. Like, because she owns who she is and doesn't give a shit what people think.
Speaking of the end of the movie.
No, I'm speaking about Jennifer Lawrence.
Oh.
Thanks for being inclusive, though. I like that.
Speaking of the end of the movie, I loved the final few shots of it. That the sort of, like, we don't see him going out of the window. And we follow Willie Garson out of the apartment complex. And... I love the shot from like a far away distance. It feels like the end of The Exorcist. It feels like the end of a 70s horror movie where there's not a lot. Like there is gray area left wide open to us, even if there really isn't.
Yeah, it definitely ends well.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I really just love the ending and the sort of final parting shot of the film. Like I think it's awesome. So like,
which leads a little bit to interpretation as to what's going on.
Right. Are both of them there or are they not? Like what was that last shot?
That's why, like, when I started thinking about alcoholism as the vampire that is draining his life, that last shot kind of is the one that clinched it for me. I was like, okay, I get it now. I see what's going on. But again, as it works as a vampire horror film too,
or just a movie about an alcoholic. Like, yeah, I mean, I agree with you. Like, I think it could kind of work on in either way.
Yeah.
And that's one of the beauties of this film. Like, even though it's kind of slow, and 2 hours is kind of a long, hour 50 is kind of a long running time. Like, I didn't feel overly taxed by watching this movie.
Right. No, I didn't either. It was 2 hours, but it was a brisk 2 hours.
It was a fine 2 hours.
Yeah, so
I say watch this movie, man.
Watch it on Shudder. So
at Shudder.
It is definitely check it out. If you have Shudder, check that shit out. Habit is great. Watch it.
Yeah, I really liked it. I couldn't recommend it more. I think it's awesome.
Drew, any final words?
I don't know if you can hear me.
No, we can.
We
yeah.
can hear you.
Okay, because it just got weird. It's like it kicked
it
me
did.
Off.
The video keeps kicking in and out.
Yeah, and I just couldn't tell. No, I mean, I like I said, I liked it. I would like to. I think it does need to be. You got to be careful when you watch it, though. It's not one that's gonna push you through a late night viewing or anything like that. Like,
or you if you have a 5 month old
who's sick, you got to be ready for. You know, you got to be ready for when you watch it, kind of deal.
Or if you stay home from work and got a new phone and.
Yeah, I mean, but no, it's fantastic. I love and want to enjoy anything that Larry Fessenden does, and I do. I honestly think what I'm learning though is I like him better as an actor than maybe as a filmmaker. I haven't quite, and I don't know if he's ever been able to truly live up to what or be able to make what he can actually get the best thing he can make as a film. Like, I think Habit was a great beginning. It's like, oh, there's so much potential here. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if he's ever been able to completely live up to it. Wendigo's good. Last Winter's good. But I don't know if
what's
he's ever
the
been
best
able to
live of them. Like, if you, what's the best of them, you think?
I don't know. I mean, the problem is I've watched them at so many different times. Like over the years, I've watched them. Yeah. Habit, I just watched. I watched Wendigo when it first came out in 2001. And I watched Last Winter several Halloweens ago. And I haven't watched them recently enough to be able to compare them like that. I think Habit is that one that's like shows so much potential, and then I don't know the rest of them show that he's ever been able to live up to it. Maybe, I think Until Dawn might be the best thing he's done.
Yeah. Oh, and we never talked about it. Damn it.
But it doesn't feel very Fessenden-like either. That's the weird thing.
No, it doesn't. It's very.
Except the reveal
mainstream.
Later. The later reveal.
Yeah. So. Brian,
yeah.
Yeah.
Fessenden's a powerhouse. You should definitely fall in love with him the way we have.
Fessenden is a powerhouse is going to be our first album title.
Thanks for listening, guys. I hope you enjoyed it, as always. I'm Brian.
I'm Tyler.
I'm Drew.
And I'm Lona.
We'll talk to you next week.
We'll see you next time.